and welcome to The Librarian on Authors on the Air. I am the librarian host, Tabitha Pope. This is a copyrighted and trademarked podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network on the web at authorsontheair.com. Tonight I have romance extraordinaire, Maya Rodale, and I hope I said your last name right because I didn't ask you before the show started. Shame on me. Maya began reading romance novels in college at her mother's insistence. She is now the best-selling and award-winning author of numerous smart and sassy romance novels. A champion of the genre and its readers, she is also the author of a nonfiction book called Dangerous Books for Girls, The Bad Reputation of Romance Novels Explained, and co-founder of Lady Jane Salon, a national reading series devoted to romantic fiction. Maya lives in New York City with her darling dog and a rogue of her own, and you can find out more on her website, which I believe is just, right here on this website, you can link to it, and Facebook, you can follow her on Facebook and Twitter. We'll give out all the social media links here in a little bit. So let me bring her on the show and welcome Maya.
Hi, how are you? It's great to be here.
Good. Glad you can make it. And guys, she is in the heart of Manhattan. So if you hear sirens, don't freak out. It's just, you know, part of where she lives. And I'm out in the suburbs. Yeah, right. I'm out in the suburbs, so you may hear dogs. So, you know, that's just the way it goes. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We were just talking about the crazy weather. Well, she's in New York and I'm in Texas, so it's been crazy kind of everywhere. And, I hope wherever you guys are, you're experiencing a little halt in the craziness that has been this week for everybody.
Yes. And hopefully spring will come soon.
Yeah, and with spring comes all of our allergies. So that's okay. But that's okay. We have more than our share here in Texas. So tell me a little bit about, I'm reading your bio and I'm reading about how you started reading romance at your mother's insistence. And this is one I've never read that before. I've heard that people usually not at some point in middle school, even some people in late elementary, middle school, college, high school were sneaking their mom's Harlequins and romance novels. But yeah, you know, your mother actually wanted you to read them. So what was that about?
just a second, what you just said, almost everyone I've talked to or interviewed or surveyed about romance reading starts, as you said, stealing them from their mom or their grandmother and hiding them.
Exactly.
Everyone has really creative ways of hiding them, but I was forced to, and it started when I was in college. I was doing a degree in fiction with a focus on women as writers and characters. And my mom had read romances as a teenager and got back into them when I was in college. And she pointed out I couldn't get a degree in women in fiction without reading the most popular and profitable books by women, for women, about women of all time ever. And I was a snooty academic, so I was like, no
way. You're one of those literary fiction people, oh my God, romance.
Completely. I read Hemingway for fun in high school. That was my beach reading. I was a total snob. And so I put up a fuss, and then she pointed out if I was going to be a serious academic, I had to do this for research. And I was like, fine, send me a syllabus. And I hope I'm less bratty now that I've aged. but she did. She sent me a syllabus, and it started with Jane Austen, of course. Uh-huh. And so I reread Pride and Prejudice, and then I read everything else. And Kathleen Woodiwest was the other big romance author on there. And I read The Flame and the Flower, and that's the book that exploded the genre, and it totally sucked me in because it has a horrible beginning and you know it's going to end happily. And I was like, I don't know how this is going to work. So I was hooked. And then, you know, they're really fun books and they're actually also really smart at the same time. So it was very easy to fall in love once I got over my snobbery.
Well, yay for your mother. She deserves a badge.
She does. She was so proud of me. And then the other day she was like, I was like, oh, I have a book out. She's like, oh, to get a copy. Not another one.
Well, you know, I don't know. It's kind of like my daughter. My daughter in singing. Yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah, okay, you sang enough. I know you sing beautifully, but you can just, do it later.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But she bought a copy. I made her buy a copy.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. At least you still have supporters. So that's good.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, that's what I have some author friends who, you know, is like, I know them really say I'll sell at least 13 copies. That's my sisters, my cousins, my best friends.
Yep.
And that might be about it, but at least I know I'll sell that many copies. Okay,
right?
Good.
Yeah.
Great.
Everyone counts. Everyone counts.
So you went to school for, you know, obviously you went to school for women's fiction, and when you read the romances, did that spark something in wanting to write versus just studying them and reading, or were you always wanting to be a writer?
That's a great question. I was really drawn to writing as a career because I could do it at home without getting dressed. So that really worked for me.
You and me both.
Right? So I was like, I got to figure out how to make this work because this is awesome, which isn't to say I haven't had jobs and worked while writing as well, because I have. But when I get those months and years where I can just write, it's awesome. But so that was always in the background, and I actually did creative writing classes because the homework was easy because, you know, you could just make stuff up. So that's kind of how I got into writing and why I tried to stay in it. But reading romance and starting to study it in school just really opened my eyes to the history of women's fiction and why romance has a bad reputation and all this stuff. So I really studied that as my undergrad a little bit, and then as my graduate degree, I really focused on that. And my master's thesis is actually the basis for Dangerous Books for Girls, The Bad Reputation of Romance Explained. Yeah, I took that and expanded on it.
Okay, and it is. I mean, that's so true that romance gets such a bad rap, and yet, you know, you go talk to people, and amongst other writers that write from all different genres, well, what do you write? Well, I want to write romance, and they're like, okay, yeah, and
yeah.
I'm like, and it's still the big money maker in the market, there, guys. You know, you can, you know, poo-poo people off all you want, but that's where the money is.
Right, yeah, and that's where the readers are.
Exactly. And we want to get it, you know, we love the escape that we get from reading romance.
Exactly, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I get so riled up when I hear readers who are made to feel that way. So this is my book for them, like, this is why you should not feel guilty about reading a romance novel and loving it.
And when you put that, so that was, it started, your thesis started that, and then you decided to take it to the next step and go ahead and make it into a nonfiction book and publish it. Okay.
Yeah. And it took a few, I mean, it was years past between when I wrote the thesis. And I originally published that and then took that down and put up the really significantly expanded and revised version. So the new version is a collection of essays where I look at why we get so mad at the term bodice rippers and what's up with alpha heroes and why are heroines always virgins, and also looking at, like, what's up with the covers and how has the genre changed, and, you know, what was the history of it that started this bad reputation?
Okay. So. Cool. Sounds like I need to pick that one up.
Yeah. It's available online.
Well, and it is so true. I mean, it's just, you know, and still, even now, even after things are so much more open because of, you know, 50 Shades started this revolution of openness about romance and erotic romance and, you know, women being okay and comfortable with their own sexuality and things like that. And, you know, I mean, it's great and all, but there are still people who, you know, put the book inside the other book so that nobody sees what they're reading. And then, you know, or they say, what are you reading? You show them the cover and they don't even read the title, but they go, ugh, you know, and it's just like,
yeah.
What?
You know,
like,
what?
It's my drug.
I know. It's legal. Let me do it. I think it is changing, though, and I think we actually have to thank 50 Shades for that, because that book got one, like, people who would never read a romance ended up reading that book. And
yeah.
I heard someone from Barnes & Noble say that people read that book and went on to read more romance, which is
right.
Awesome.
So it was a gateway.
It was a gateway drug book.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then media started covering romance more because it was too popular to ignore. And once they, like,
right.
There's some places that are still snarky and will still do stark, but, like, Jezebel.com has great romance content now. Elle.com did a great piece recently. And so it's really cool to see it cropping up. And, in fact, when I wrote my master's thesis on this, I had all these, like, a few examples of snark in the media towards romance, because it wasn't really discussed, and when it was snarky. And then when I went to update and revise it, it had really changed.
Wow.
So there were more positive portrayals and also more snarky ones. But
well, and and you know, the snarkiness, it runs, that's going to be there anyway, because people, they're jealous. You know, they're jealous that something's so simple, and these stories really aren't, they're just, people identify, you know, they're not like these really deep, intricate spy things where you got to remember all these laws and rules that they're breaking and they're, what country they're in and all this, you know, it's about what people and life and how they can't really understand that something that's so basic, a basic part of human nature, really gets to people and people identify it versus, you know, Jason Bourne. Not
right,
to say there's
right.
anything wrong with Jason Bourne, but there's a, you know, not everybody wants that type of pizza. They want their pizza this way, and you know.
Exactly.
And I
have
think
the pizza they like.
Well, exactly, and I think people, you know, women who work and have to come home and handle a household, whether they have kids or not, women with children. Women who are empty nesters, you know, I mean, you can go all the way down through it, and you've got people who need that, even if they're only doing it for 30 minutes a day, picking up a book and getting an escape from this reality that they live in. And to know that you can pick up a romance novel and it's going to have that happily ever after, no matter what, it's going to be there. Then it's, you know, it's not, it's like fail safe.
Yeah.
Not going to be totally disappointed at the end.
It's so true. And I realized after I started becoming a romance reader, like, I didn't want to watch TV shows or movies unless I knew how it ended. Like, it wasn't as relaxing for me anymore, because there's something when you know that it's going to make you feel good.
Yeah.
That you can just really let yourself go into the story. And I had a moment a few months ago where I, you know, had just one of those horrible, horrible days and got some, like, really hard emotional news. And I was like, thank God I'm in the middle of this romance series, because I know I can, like, go sit on my couch and be absorbed in this book. And I know my problems are still going to be there when it's over, but it's going to take the edge off.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I'm going to come to that, like, stronger and recharged and optimistic. And I was really grateful to that book and all the romance books at that time.
I agree. I think I've made it through, I know I made it through one really bad divorce and a couple of other really bad relationship things by, you know, just drowning my sorrows in a romance book and, you know, moving on with life. But, you know,
yeah.
I don't know if they should do some kind of study about romance novel, reading romances and how, when, you know, when you read, you kind of, you get so inside of the story, or the story gets so inside of you, that it actually has physiological effects on you, crying,
yeah.
You know, tensing up, whatever, however the story is. But romance generates these, you know, heavy emotions, the heavy emotions, like, you know, you get sad, you get happy, you feel love, you feel lust, you feel, you know, all the whole range of emotions. And I think they should do some kind of like physiology study on readers of romance. And I guarantee you that they get more endorphin and everything else than, you know, if they were reading, I don't know, horror.
Yeah. Horror's the newspaper. Agree with you. I think it, like, activates
watching debate. No.
I know. Oh, my God. So glad we're having this conversation right now. but, yeah, I would love to see those studies. So maybe next on my list is to figure out how to make someone do it.
Yeah.
So if there's
anything, I can get you a bunch
MRI
of
MRI machine.
Yeah. I could get you a bunch of willing subjects, so let me know.
Okay.
We have a whole bunch of them. They're all listening right now.
So. Yeah, that will not be the hard part of this project.
No, just give them a good book. They'll be happy. So it'll be all good. So when you decided to, you went ahead, you wrote the Dangerous Books for Girls, and that was, that's a really cool thing. And I got to get that. But, and you decided to start writing romance yourself. Mm-hmm. How did you go about this? Did you say, I'm going to sit down and see how I do with this? Or did you, I know obviously you took, the classes in college, but did you, seek out writing groups, or were you part of RWA or any other groups or anything like that?
Not at first. So I started writing like right out of college, and my first project was this book that's still the book of my heart. I'm still going to write it and hopefully sell it. But I wrote the first few chapters and a synopsis and sent it out, and 12 out of 12 agents agreed it was completely unsellable. And so, and then I asked an agent friend at the time, and she had rejected it. I was like, why? And she was like, well, you can't sell this book, and you need to be writing romance right now. I know you love reading it. That's where you should go. So I asked if she would represent me if I gave her a romance novel. She said, sure. And I said, I'll have it for you in 3 months, which is absurd. But, I was like, just graduated. I think I was working at the time, but like a customer service job. So I just wrote, and I had a first draft for her in 3 months. Because it's a wonderful feeling when you don't know any better and you just go.
Right.
I hadn't been to RWA. I didn't know anything about any of that. It wasn't my first full length novel, but I think the first time it's the best one I'd done so far. She agreed to represent it, and then she had me revise it, and then I had a year-long slog of just rejection, 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 revise, resubmit, reject. And that was really hard. It was a hard year. But at the end of it, someone took a chance on me and picked up that book and the next in that little series, the little two-book series. And then I started. And then at that time, I joined RWA and started meeting other authors and building my community around that. And then it's just like, there's been major ups and downs for sure, but it kind of kept happening. I just kept writing and kept submitting, and people gave me money to do it. And I was like, okay. And you figure it out. So, I still I've been doing this for maybe 12 years now, and I still get so much out of going to a craft workshop at a romance writers conference or talking to other authors about the business aspect. So I'm always learning, which is what keeps me engaged. Yes, that's how I got started. I didn't know any better. I just did it.
You just did it. Okay. So, yeah, it goes back to the whole butt in the chair thing. You got to sit down and give it a shot, You'll never know until you try.
Exactly. And revisions. It's horrible. They're no fun.
Yeah.
But that's where the magic happens. And I think revisions is where you lose a lot of aspiring writers, and then submitting and sticking with it after rejection.
Yeah.
So I think it's people with the toughest skin.
Are you sentimental about your rejections? Do you keep them somewhere, like in a binder or anything? Some authors do that.
Yeah, and I highly recommend doing this. I saved all mine in chronological order in a special binder. And this was my way of dealing with, like, one every week, every month through that really hard year. And at a certain point, I gathered enough, and I sat down and just read it. And it was like, I love your plot, but I don't like your heroine. I love your heroine. I don't like your plotting. And so when you look at it all together, you're like, this is just a crapshoot. Like,
absolutely.
It's not personal. It's just, you know, and different drafts have different aspects. But at a certain point, I could see the big picture and that it's not personal. You just have to keep chugging along until you find that fit with an editor.
Right, and that's what I hear from people is, you know, that they're kind of saying, you know, you just got to keep trying until you find the right agent or the right editor who says, wow, okay, yeah, let's give this a shot, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, perseverance, and it pays off because you get to stay home
yeah.
in your pajamas and write now.
I know, right? Like, I'll take a year's worth of rejection for that, sure.
Absolutely. I'm currently a stay-at-home mom. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, I wish I didn't look like I've been run over by a Mack truck, but hey, I don't have to get out of my pajamas unless somebody's coming over, you know?
Right, yeah.
Like, I got to go put pants on. Okay, you
know,
I'm going to go get dressed. Well, so you write contemporary and some historical, right? So you kind of
yes
walk both sides of the well. You don't walk a line because you actually do both.
I do primarily historical, but I have done contemporary.
Right. So
yes.
What is it about historical that is you're drawn to? Is it just that's what you were recommended to do, or are you a history buff where you like certain time periods or anything?
I've always loved history, and that's always appealed to me. But the real reason I write Regency romance is because when I was just a new romance reader, I only knew my mom as a source for romance. And this was like before social media and any of that.
Yeah.
So I read what she read. And she read Regency romance. And it was literally like years before I figured out there were other subgenres of romance.
So you thought that was all the romance.
Yeah. So like by then I was confirmed. And now I read much more widely. I love reading contemporary. And I never thought I'd be into paranormals. But then I read the Black Dagger Brotherhood. And I was like, I do
oh, hell yeah.
Vampire.
Oh, sorry.
I know, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
So
well, see, Twilight was my gateway. I was a young adult librarian, so Twilight was my gateway, and I read Twilight because I was the young adult librarian that was a total snob, just like you were the literary snob. And I was like, I'm not reading that commercialized crap. I'm passing on good young adult books to these teenagers, you know. And one of my girls was like, you got to read this. So I was like, fine, I'm gonna read it. I was like, oh my god. And so then I passed it on to all my friends, and then I was like freaking out. But then I had a friend of mine who said, oh, you like that, you want to read some adult stuff, and this is to you, Squirt, if you're listening, this is to you because you're the one who made me accept Sherilyn Kenyon. And I read Fantasy Lover, and I was like, hey, that's not bad. And then I read the second one, which actually gets into the more of the dark hunters. And I was like, oh my God. Well, then somebody said, hey, you like that? You should try J.R. Ward. And then I started that. I mean, so really my route started in the paranormal, and
okay.
I always loved historical fiction, you know? So I historical romance was kind of a no brainer for me, but contemporary romance, I was not really interested. I would look at the covers and go, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But that's what I predominantly read now is contemporary. So, and that's what I write is contemporary. So it's just weird how you kind of, you know, evolve. I don't know. It's like, almost like I grew up as my, as a reader over the years.
Yeah.
You know? And I read less paranormal.
Yeah.
I read less paranormal, but I don't, it's not because I don't like it. It's just that I've discovered all these other things now and, you know.
Right.
It's pretty cool. So, yeah, that was my gateway drug. And I've heard that from a lot of people, too, is that Twilight was their gateway drug, believe it or not. And I mean adults. I'm not talking about teenagers. So, yeah.
I've heard that.
It happens. But, you know, again, that is where, one of those instances where something became so commercialized that the media could not ignore it. They had to say something.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And that way it got handed to people who probably would have never read it or picked it up before. So
yeah.
Being adults versus, you know, a young adult, it was a young adult book, but we were like, okay, everybody's talking about it. We got to read it. So.
Well, so many adults read young adult is what I'm discovering.
Oh, well, that's true. And I think it's like, I think they said it was 60% or more that were actually adults reading them, purchasing them for themselves versus for the actual teens.
Oh, yeah.
But there's this whole reason why that, because, you know, if you write for teens, you've got to keep it extremely fast paced and interesting, or they will put it down. They have too much competing for their attention. Whereas an adult, we'll sit through several chapters of la 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 because we know it's going to get to something later. We're a little more patient, but a teenager's not.
So it
has to be kind of snappy and shorter. And
right.
Some people prefer the shorter. I remember, you know, this, just an example, and my husband might be listening, so I'll be nice. But when we first started dating, I would say, hey, you should read this. And he would look at how many pages it was and go, oh, that's too long, or that's a lot. You know, I mean, he likes to read, but it was just like, that's too many pages. There's 400 pages in this book. You know, I'm like, come on. You won't care once you start reading it. And believe it or not, he is an avid reader now. But, you know, and he doesn't care. It doesn't really matter now. But I told him, I was like, you sound like a teenager.
You
know?
Yeah.
I would come into the library.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, when it's a good, gripping story that's, like, written for the reader's entertainment instead of, like, the writer showing off, like, those 400 pages fly by.
Exactly. And you don't want it to end. You're like, more pages.
I know. You ever get that moment when you're like, I can't put this book down, but I don't want it to end.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, sign of a good book.
Well, and that's kind of like when you're reading on your Kindle and you got 10% left and you're like, 10%? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. No.
That's not fair.
It's a problem.
So you read all kinds of things then. You read from all the different subgenres.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I really try to see what's out there. See what the new voices and trends are.
Yeah, they come and go.
See what the tropes are that are resonating. So, and also, you know, like I'm still a romance reader. So, I still like it's also when you're like writing historical romance all day, that's kind of not your relaxing evening thing anymore.
Oh,
so,
yeah. You want to go in another world?
A little different. Yeah. Oh, they can take a shower and call people.
Well, yeah, right. And when you do historical, though, I mean, it's a lot more involved because obviously you got to do a little bit of research before you can really, you know, make a authentic story too. So, how much of your writing time is put into you doing research? Of course, I guess if you write about the same time frequently, then you've kind of got that down, probably.
Yeah, I mean, the basics of the Regency, like you pretty much know after a certain point, and I bet any avid Regency romance reader probably knows more than they realized about rules of etiquette, and maybe not so much the politics, because I haven't read a lot of very political Regencies lately, but you know a lot more than you think. And we also want a very specific view of the Regency world, and that's the one we get from romance, which isn't always true.
Mm-hmm.
But there are not that many dukes who are young and single and have all their teeth. So, this is where we don't want historical accuracy. So, there's that. But, you know, like right now I'm writing a book. It's the third book in my new series, Keeping Up with the Cavendishes. And the heroine is like a brilliant mathematician. And I hate math. Actually, I don't hate math. I don't know math. Yeah. And the hero is like a total jock. And I'm like not a sports person. So I'm really happy to do a lot of research on that aspect of their character. So like what sports would he do? How do you describe it? What's like some fun factoids that he would apply to situations? And how does a person really focus on math? Like think about the world and like what, I don't even know like the words she would use. So that would be hard to do right now. Yeah. I'm putting it off as long as possible and writing around it. Like insert math thing here. That's my quiet panic right now in life.
So tell us a little bit about Lady Jane Swan and how that all came about.
Sure.
Let me just
so
put
Lady
this out real quick. If you want to call in, there are a few copies of the new
Lady
book,
Bridget's Diary.
Lady Bridget's Diary, up for grabs. So call in with a question. The phone number is 347-633-9609. And go ahead, tell us about Lady Jane.
Lady Jane? Lady Jane or Lady Bridget?
let's talk about Lady Jane, then we'll talk about Lady Bridget.
Perfect. Lady Jane Salon is a romance reading series that I co-founded like a million years ago, maybe like seven, with Hope Tarr and Leanna Renee Heber, who are also romance authors, and Ron Hogan, who ran, I think he still runs, a literary salon in New York. And you know, it was one of those just New York nights where we all sort of know each other, and we went out for drinks and talking about a reading series, and someone was like, is there a romance reading one? And instead of saying no, the answer was like, obviously we should make one. And I think this happened in like January, so we had just enough time to like pull it off for February 14th, for Valentine's Day. And we did, and then it's been happening ever since. And I'm not actively involved as much because I just have too many deadlines. But they keep the salon running every month in downtown Manhattan. And there's now satellite salons all over the country, which I think is just the coolest thing. And I've been lucky enough to visit some of those. And it's really amazing because they have such a great community of readers and writers.
That's wonderful.
Coming out every month. Yeah. And it's awesome because you'll have, like, a mega bestseller sharing the stage with like a debut author, and some salons will have even like an unpublished member read. It's really cool.
Well, that is cool. And I think I told you before the show that it's just, you know, even for people like myself who are budding writers, who, you know, who are just getting our feet wet, and it's very cool to just kind of, I don't know, absorb the aura around someone who is an accomplished romance author. You know, in my RWA chapter, I have some really great, very successful published romance authors. And it's just, you know, they're my friends, and I'm learning from them, and I'm picking up their tips and just getting their great karma, you know, attitude and wonderful. It's really great. So that is a wonderful thing. And, you know, the readers can see that, too, and you can't say enough about that. So,
and I think that's why the romance genre is so successful, is that we don't build those walls between authors of a certain level or even readers and authors, and we kind of just, like, embrace everyone and pull each other forward and, you know, could we be better here or there? Absolutely. But I think on the whole, it's we really pay it forward with what we learn and
absolutely
pass it on to the next.
It's all about the love. It's all about the love.
Indeed. Indeed. Surprise.
You're right. Well, it's romance. It's all about the love. Tell us about Lady Bridges Diary. This is your latest release.
It is
brand new.
It
came out.
Yeah, it came out on Tuesday. And
okay.
It's the first book in this new series I'm calling Keeping Up with the Cavendishes, about an American family that unexpectedly inherits a dukedom in Regency, England.
Mm-hmm.
And as one does, or wishes, so of course they go over there. And it's each of the four siblings, and each book is, you know, someone's story to, like, figure out how to fit in high society. And so the first book is Lady Bridget's Diary, and it is a Regency version of Bridget Jones's Diary, which is,
okay,
of course, sort of Pride and Prejudice. So
mm-hmm.
It's a mashup of the two with a little dash of Mean Girls. And, you know, my Bridget is, like, really wants to succeed and really fit in and, like, be a perfect lady. But she just doesn't have the personality for that. She's just too forthright and honest and, like, you know, nice, genuinely.
Yeah.
And she's not a good rule follower. So, and then of course she comes up against Lord Darcy, who's like well-behaved gentleman personified, and he's horrified mm-hmm. by her, but, you know, falls for her, and you see where this is going.
Yeah.
There's at least two scenes where my Darcy's shirt gets wet, and then there's
yes.
a lot more scenes with kissing.
Yay!
Yay!
That shirt Darcy is the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we couldn't get yeah. enough of that. I know Colin Farrell's aged a bit, but that was just one of the best scenes in a movie ever.
Yep. Yep. And my husband hasn't read the book or seen any of the movies.
Oh, no.
So, I know.
Well, it's funny that you bring up Pride and Prejudice, because I was having this conversation with another author about Pride and Prejudice, and Pride and Prejudice is one of my favorites, but when I read it in high school, I hated it.
Mm-hmm.
It was awful.
Why did you hate it?
So lame. It's so boring. I couldn't identify with any of it. I hadn't taken world history yet. You know, I just didn't know enough about the world and about relationships and about how backbiting people are and how, you know, just their class prejudices were. I just didn't know enough. So I didn't
mm-hmm.
appreciate it for what it was. But when I reread it in college later, much later, I was like, this is brilliant. You know? And I was like, oh, man, you know, why do they feed these to teenagers who have no clue? You know, they couldn't possibly
yeah.
appreciate everything about it. And it's not their fault, but it's just they don't have enough background knowledge, you know, to
digest it.
I
had a similar experience. Like when I remember reading it and when she first rejects him, I was like, why? Like, he's, like, cool and has 10,000 a year. Like, he really likes you. And then later, as I became, like, a, you know, more educated feminist person, I was like, oh, that was the most badass thing ever.
Right.
And I think that's why that book, like, it stands the test of time, is every time you read
yeah.
it, you just get more and more, and the more you know about
right.
the world and humans, the more amazing you realize it is.
I absolutely agree with that
so.
One. So yeah, so good. I'm excited to read that one because yeah, anything that has a flair of
thanks. You got to keep one of those
cool.
free copies for yourself.
Yeah. Well, she sent me a link, but it didn't work for some reason. So I'll just get back with your publicist and try to get that link.
Okay.
But yeah, that's exciting. And then so you're planning four books in that series?
Yes.
Okay.
Lady Bridget just came out this week. And the next book is Chasing Lady Amelia, which will come out this summer.
Okay.
And I'm writing Claire's story now and panicking about math.
Yeah.
So.
That's really, really left brain, way, way left brain.
Yeah.
I'm pretty left brain, but I still, math is just not great. I don't know.
I'm really excited to maybe learn it. for like the week and I write those scenes.
I can tell you, having a 14-year-old daughter who's taking algebra, I forgot so much of it. I was really good at math in high school and college, but, you know, it was like in one ear, out the gone.
The other, yeah. Use it or lose it, right?
Yeah, and I lost it, and I didn't care, and I haven't used it since. So, you know, until I had algebra. Anyway, enough about math.
Yeah. More about romance.
Well, good about that. So do you attend the convention, Marquee or RWA or any of those?
I do. I usually attend the Romance Writers of America convention, mm-hmm. and I highly recommend it for any aspiring romance writers out there.
Lots of good stuff.
I'm sorry?
Lots of good craft stuff there, too, and business, yeah.
It's so great. It's just the people you meet is amazing. I've made some really great true friends from that conference.
Well, that's good.
And just from, like, sitting down randomly next to people at the luncheon, you know?
Right, yeah. Struck up a conversation.
I've been friends for 10 years, yeah.
Well, because, you know, like I said, it's all about the love. It's all about the love. So wonderful.
It is.
So do you ever see yourself writing something outside of your comfort zone, like paranormal or something like that? Do you ever want to venture out there?
I do. I have some stories in the back burner that are not romance that I'm working on. Yeah, it's like a little too soon to talk about any of them. But they're very informed by like my background in romance.
I want to stay here. You know,
I'm sorry.
Do you ever just get in your comfort zone and say, I don't want to go out here, but you know, you normally.
I'm sorry, you're cutting out a bit.
Yeah, it's cutting out a little bit. It's the studio. Can you hear me now?
Okay, yes.
Okay, yeah. I just wonder if you ever, like, get stuck in your comfort zone and don't want to, like, step out of your comfort zone, or whether you always kind of have ideas that might step outside those lines. You said you were a real follower.
This is, like, the thing that happens when you're on, like, book 10 or more, maybe, you know, when you start writing a lot of them, I hear a lot of writers say this, like, I just keep waiting for it to get easier. Like, thinking now that you know what you're doing after 4 or 5 books, like, this should be a breeze. And it never does. And it can be, like, hard and frustrating. And, you know, you're writing that, like, first sex scene again. It's like, how many times can I write this virginity scene or whatever it is? And so I really do try to make things hard for myself. So, again, with this, like, Lady Claire's book with the math and the sports, it's the littlest thing, but it's hard for me and keeps me engaged in the writing process. And my book, What a Wallflower Wants, I deviated from my usual really lighthearted, fluffy comedies. Because I wanted to write about a heroine who experienced sexual assault and gets a happy ever after. And and like that required research and sensitivity. And, you know, I couldn't like just keep cracking jokes through the whole book, you know? So,
right.
I mean, there's some in there, but it challenged me as a writer. And that was one of the greatest writing experiences I had. And I also went into that one being like, what rules can I break? And mm-hmm. trying to write that. So that kept me, making it hard for yourself can really make it more engaging. And that book hit the bestseller list. So I was really rewarded for trying to break those rules and
something a little different. I'm sure the readers were rewarded as well, because, you know, you were trying to really challenge yourself. Therefore, you know, you put the extra oomph into it to, you know, make it something special. So that's pretty cool. And I can see where you probably have to do that after you get a certain But two, when you get, you know, when you become successful, like the definition of successful is you can start to make changes and break rules and still your work will be accepted. So that's a good thing. That's a really good thing.
I think that's, you know, true is when you have that foot in the door and readers that are willing to come along on the ride with you, you can try new things. And I think it's something authors should be aware of, that like if you are at that point, like what boundaries can you push for our genre to really move it forward?
Right. I agree.
If readers love your writing and they trust you, and I say this as a reader, I'll go there with an author.
Right.
So, I mean, as long as it ends happily.
Right, right. But, you know, as someone I think of, I'm just kind of off the top of my head, is like Alessandra Torre. I mean, she writes all over the place. You know, she's got the romantic comedy. She's got the contemporary romance. She's got the erotic thriller romance things. I mean, they're just crazy, but that's what her readership will follow her, because they're so engaged in her writing that they kind of they'll go wherever she wants to go with it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that to me would be if I was to become a successful writer, that would be my definition, is can I rules now? Can I deviate and have my readers still go with me? So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's a good definition. I like that.
Okay, well, we're about down to... Yeah, let's get that down. I sit around and dream of my future as a writer, and, you know, I'm getting a year older every time, but that's okay. It's all right. I still have
You'll
time left.
It.
You know, as long as I have to put my picture of me being an elderly lady with a walker on the back, they won't know that I'm old.
As long as you can type.
Yeah. Well, now we've got some excellent software that you can dictate too. So
That's true.
I like that. I'm like, even if I lose my hands and sight, as long as I can still talk, it'll be okay. And
there
everybody's like, oh God, quit talking.
No.
But we're about down to, we got about 11 minutes. Left. I want to put the number out one more time in case they want to call in. We, you know, who knows? Oh, it's hit or miss. 347-633-9609. And I'm going to, I haven't done this at all in 2016. I used to do it on every single show. And I think I've just been, I don't know, I've been kind of in a funk since October. But I used to ask questions at the end of each show, and I would ask the same ones to every author, and I plan to go back through my first year and a half and get everybody's answer and like make a chart, because I get some really funny answers, but I'm going to ask different questions these times.
Okay.
I think I'm going to start asking different questions because I really like these questions, so I'm going to ask you these questions, and then I'm going to put them on my list, you know, put you on my chart. So you'll be charted
awesome.
In with everybody else. Because I love these questions, because I get some really cool responses. And the first one kind of makes you feel at ease, and then I wham you with another one. So so here's my fun questions at the end. First one is, what is your favorite color?
Pink. Sparkle.
Okay. Sparkly pink. She's
sparkly.
She's a sparkly girl. Okay. What about your favorite movie?
Roman Holiday.
Oh,
which
that's
is
an
the basis,
awesome movie.
Right? That is basically the plot of Chasing Lady Amelia.
Oh, wow. See, you and I would be like fast friends, because you like all the same stuff. Okay, how about a place that you would like to visit?
Ooh. I really want to go to all 50 states.
So you want to do the whole... Whole 50. Okay. That makes sense.
I
want to hit all
of them.
I've never gone
30.
Oh, that's pretty good. Book touring does that, though.
Yeah. I got some places to go, though.
Yeah. Have you been to Alaska?
I have not.
Okay. Well, definitely do the cruise up there. It's pretty cool.
All right. That's on my list.
Okay. How about a book that you've read more than once?
Ooh, probably I'll go with Romancing Mr. Bridgerton by Julia Quinn.
Oh, okay. And the last one is two items on your bucket list.
Oh, my gosh.
That's the one everybody says, oh, my gosh, too.
I don't have a bucket list.
Well, one of them should be you need to do make a bucket list.
Seriously. Oh, I'm throwing such a blank.
Well, one of them could be, I guess, visiting all 50 states, because you said you want to do all 50 states.
Visiting all 50 states, yeah. And writing those, keep writing books and write those weird, new, different books.
Well, there you go. That's good. Okay. See,
I'll keep
you
busy for
the
next few years.
Okay, we have just a few minutes left. So let tell everybody where they can find you on your website. Your website is just Maya Rodale, right? MayaRodale.com.
Yes, dot com.
Okay.
Yep.
And then you have Facebook.
Yep, I'm on Facebook. You look me up as Maya Rodale Writer. And okay. I'm on Twitter as Maya Rodale. Didn't get really creative with the naming.
It's so much easier if you're not.
I know, right? I am available on the internet, and Lady Bridget's Diary is out now, and you can get it Walmart, Target, Barnes & Noble, iBooks, Amazon, wherever they should have it.
Awesome. That's wonderful. Well, good luck, and we look forward to the rest of the Cavendish series.
Thank
you. Yeah, that sounds exciting. So let's see. So if Roman Holidays, that one, what else you got? Like Sabrina?
this is totally, I don't think I've announced this anywhere yet, but I'll tell you. Claire's story will be She's All That.
Ah, okay. Okay, there you go.
The Freddie Prinze movie. So.
Yes. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Yay. Revelations on the librarian. There we go. Well, thanks so much for being. Yeah, right. Thanks so much for being on the show tonight. I'm glad you could take the time and hang out with us, so we could talk instead of watch that terrible debate. And
indeed. And thank you for having me. I don't usually stay up this late, but it was totally worth it.
Well, I'm so glad you stayed up with us. I'm so glad. You can tell your husband to come out of the other room now, because you know.
Okay.
That's right. It's your turn. There you go. That is what romance is about, though.
It really is. That and emptying the dishwasher.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay. I got a whole list of other things, but okay, we'll go with that.
I know.
Well, you have a great evening up in New York, and we'll be back. Let us know when the next one comes out, and we'll pass it on to our listeners.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. This is wonderful.
Have a great evening.
Thanks. You too. Bye.
And you can hear me every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern here on The Librarian. Thanks to everybody for listening tonight. I can be found on Facebook as The Librarian on Authors on the Air, on Twitter as HOT_librarian_, and on Google Plus as Tabitha Pope. This podcast has been recorded and will be available as a podcast on the Authors on the Air website and right here at this link where you're listening to it right now. Authors on the Air Global Radio Network can be found online at AuthorsOnTheAir.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and just about anywhere else you can think of in the social media universe. We have 15 shows, I believe, and we have a book reviewer network. So please look for those things online as well. And thanks to everybody for letting me share my passion for romance with all of you. Have a lovely evening, and big smooches to my gorgeous husband and for my mom for keeping the little monster in the other room while I did the show. You guys have a great evening. See you next Thursday right here on The Librarian. Sweet dreams.